Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Star Sound Speaks and welcome to eclipse season. This is Irliana Samsara, your host, Star Sound Astrology. And I'm so blessed. We are all so blessed to have Andrea Michelle with us, visionary. I call her a visionary astrologer. And welcome back, Andrea. I'm so glad to see you.
The pleasure is mine. Thank you so much for having me back.
You know, I have to say that my eyes are teary right now because this eclipse is angular for me, these eclipses, Libra and Aries, and so I'm really feeling them big time, and I feel very raw and vulnerable. My normal way of like having all my notes, I didn't do that, and I'm just allowing myself to let go of that. The eclipse, I already feel it, and I know that's very normal to feel things coming sometimes months before it gets there. I just want everyone to know that if you're feeling like me, it's okay. And giving ourselves permission, especially in eclipse season, it's the biggest astrological event of the year. It's when the lights go out, and there are things that the divine has always wants to show us. And in the yakety yak of daily life, and the noise, we can't always hear that, even though we may want to. So my invitation for everyone is to always remember to keep looking at eclipses as a time of great revelations that can only really occur in that when the lights go off. And so to see it not as something scary because our normal life is disrupted with sun and moon getting eclipsed, it's a divine disruption. And we have to remember that in when we get into fear. I just love you so much, Andrea, because there's no other astrologer I know. Here's my tissue. That, you just talk so deeply about meeting love, meeting fear with love and being okay with that unknown. And so with that said, welcome back. We are so grateful you're here.
Thank you. I do my best to speak from places within me where I have touched in on what I'm speaking about. I do my best in my daily life to meet places in me so that when I'm speaking, there is some resonance and some echo for others of something pre-digested, something where it's not just, something coming through and I'm just saying something that I have no relationship with. My practice is to lean in and have a relationship with even the most scary places in me so that I can speak from a place of not authority, but a place of some having met.
Right.
So perhaps that's what you're
The,
sensing,
yeah.
and that's all I can do. So thank you very much for entrusting me with whatever I'm bringing and your viewers as well, to whatever extent they resonate with what I have to say. So thank you very much.
These eclipses that have been happening in Libra and Aries, this is a lunar eclipse coming up March 25th. So that's a south node lunar eclipse in Libra. So much of these have to do with authenticity. Maybe that's where we can start. As we can see here, exalted sun, 5 degrees of Aries, and the full moon lunar eclipse. Lunar eclipses are like full moons on steroids. The messages are going to be very, very loud for us in a lunar eclipse. I was saying to Andrea earlier, I love the fact that the supergalactic center is at 5 degrees. So this lunar eclipse is going to be conjuncting that. This is different from the galactic center, which is 26 degrees Sag and some minutes. The supergalactic center, our United States, oh, just get the new and improved super version. Super. It's like this huge engulfing black hole. It's really interesting that this is occurring because we're talking about authenticity and desire. And so this is not your typical lunar eclipse. Why might this whole concept of desire, how is it that desire becomes true desire? Maybe you could speak to that.
Yeah, as you and I were speaking of, If I had to put a theme to this lunar eclipse, it would be the desire, finding the desire before all other desires. Because the word desire, as we spoke of, is from the Latin desideri, which means from the stars. So that's why sidereal astrology is star-based astrology, right? So the supergalactics, so when I say the desire beyond the desire, it's tapping into the soul's desire, which may or may not have anything to do with what we believe we want or desire from life. So it's getting underneath my want for a perfect partner, or to have, you know, a million viewers on my Instagram account or whatever it is, like, or I need to become the best, blah, 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 blah. Some of these things may or may not be a direct result of the deeper soul's desire, but they may not. So the soul's desire is more ineffable. It's less tangible. It's more of a, like a field in which we saturate ourselves. And our actions arise from that field. So in order to get to that, from the human perspective, we are going to, if we're really meeting it from an honest place, if we're really coming from an honest place, we're going to have to meet the places where we are not in accordance with our true desire. That's just the way it works. We tend to forget, or we have short-term memory around that the human, I would say, earth plane existence is a series of, you could say, initiations that show us how we've forgotten, the forgetfulness that we come into, the, you know, the veil that we come into, right?
Yeah.
And so by definition, before we can meet the truth, we have to come up with all the false truths that we have believed in, that we have become accustomed to identifying as. And that when we meet those heartfully, when we meet those awake, meaning not looking away, that's the doorway into the greater truth. That truth has two faces, and that the deception, which is equally part of truth, has to be faced and gone through in order to meet the truth. That's just the way it is. And we tend to forget, and we want to skip over the hard parts, right?
Right.
The hard parts are hard because of how it shows us how much we're actually saying no to the truth. That's the paradox. Okay. So the desire that this supergalactic center, and we talked about the Philip Sedgwick article, which is a great article, which I think you can put in the liner notes for people, is like this hunger to be met, this hunger to get something that one feels that one doesn't have. So a good way, if we allow ourselves the breadth or the bandwidth to do this, is around this time to feel what I tell myself I can never have, but to not believe any of it, to just stay with what's going to be uncomfortable around where I feel the deficiency, the lack, where the stories live around where I can never have what I want. Being honest with our capacity to lean into the feelings of it without believing it is saying I am actually participating in my own, and meeting my own edges, in meeting my own edges of what, of where I have held myself in a cage of deception around that I can never get what I actually tell myself I want. That's where we meet. Well, maybe what I tell myself I want is just a false metric until I'm available for the deeper desideri, the desire of my birth chart, the soul's desire. And Pluto is in a sextile to the north node and a trine to the south node. And Pluto in the evolutionary model of astrology is the soul's desire. Now, that's generally in a natal chart, but you could say the general desire for human evolution right now at one Aquarius, we're just at the beginning. We don't really know what that is yet collectively, nor should we. but at least the admittance that I'm not quite sure that I know what the true desire is in this circumstance of how I'm meant to be for the collective. That is one place that we can start. Admitting I don't know. That's honest.
I was going to say too, the domicile ruler, you know, this is a Libra eclipse. So Venus being the ruler, here she is, and it's in a quincunx. So she's in aversion to this, to the sun. But right here, she's in Pisces. Venus is exalted in Pisces. So there's this great opportunity to, like you were saying, looking beyond where what beliefs I have and the things, you know. I think of Venus too as like very shallow. Get the shadow side of Venus is, you know, and this is certainly going to help us with Venus in Pisces. We can be looking at where we have deluded ourselves with these shallow desires or vain, even you could say, not in vain. I'm not trying to judge or saying vanity is, you know, oh my God, but it's like, hey, it's real. It's like, you know, there is this whole thing about looking good is so big in our culture. Like we rank people in our mind according to, oh, well, you've got a million Instagram followers, or you must be somebody important. And somebody who doesn't have that is like, oh, they're not important. Or, you know, to judge by shallow factors, you know, these are some of the things that, you know, we could be coming into at play here in this lunar eclipse. The things that we have believed that are false.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And can I ask you, Eliana, to show the screen, the sky shot that I sent you, the second one that has Venus, Saturn,
and Mars. Yes, here it is.
Thank you. So a few days before this eclipse, Venus, which if you can highlight where Venus is there, she's not listed there. She and Saturn formed what's called an occultation right there in the waters of the water bearer. The water bearer is feeding the waters of the fish, the hungry fish, the solitary one. Okay. So this
is. You could just give people, in case they're not familiar with that term, occultation. Can you just.
Okay. An occultation means, well, and you can show the first slide if you want. That's where two planets are conjunct, not just by longitude on the chart wheel, but by latitude as well. So Venus and Saturn were almost on top of each other just a few days before. So occultations are always stronger than just a conjunction by latitude. I mean, sorry, a conjunction by longitude. So occultations mean the influence of those two planets on each other is way more intensified. Okay. So Mars and Venus too, their recent conjunction in February, they're each morning stars, but they're each on different paths. And we know that from looking at sky factors. For example, Venus is dimming slowly and starting to speed up. She's also getting further and further from Earth. Mars, on the other hand, is starting to brighten, slow down, and come closer and closer to Earth. So at their meeting, at their Hieros Gamos in Aquarius, having both met up with Pluto and opposite the sun, opposite the moon, to me, that's how do we stand neck and neck with things that seem to have opposing values and objectives, and have each be valid. So how do we stay with the discrepancy of polarity to allow the reconciliation to happen on its own naturally, rather than trying to force a false harmony or force a false equality? Mm-hmm. When that's not the objective. The objective is to highlight distinctions, not so we can stay in this hierarchical better, worse, but that it's true that we are not all equal in terms of our where we are at in our development, nor should we be, nor should we falsely try to manufacture equality. that disempowers us from finding our own path forward. So in essence, this eclipse with Venus, with Saturn in between Venus and Mars, for me, Saturn is the binding force for culture. How can we make culture building our unifying focus of what is seemingly separate, Mars and Venus, which is not making ourselves artificially equal, but allowing differences in how we apply ourselves to get there. Some of us are going to have a more feminine path to get there. Some of us a more masculine path. This is regardless of gender. We have to listen to our own wiring, our own uniqueness. But again, Saturn is the binding force. Saturn is the culture maker. So we expect, and I'm speaking here now from a general specific, general viewpoint, we expect support from the gods, planets, but what do we do to sacrifice to make ourselves accessible to their wisdom? Are we still expecting it to come from something, someone, or somewhere outside other than from within? And now I want to highlight, if you want to bring up the chart, that Ceres or Demeter, Demeter Thesmophoros is one of her epithets, which means the lawbringer. She's squaring the nodes here. She's at 14 degrees of Capricorn.
Here she is.
There she is. Okay, perfect. So she's squaring the nodal axis here. And as Ceres or Demeter Thesmophoros, the lawbringer, squaring the node, she, as a reminder, she's the goddess that became human for a time. None of the other Olympian gods or goddesses became human for a time. In the myth, when she was searching for her daughter Persephone, she became Doso, the wet nurse for Metanera and her husband. That's a whole other thing. But she had to sacrifice her naivete to regain her innocence. Innocence can never be tarnished. We never lose our innocence, but it can be, there can be a veneer or a varnish or a dust that settles on our innocence that can become, that can be, but we can be naive, which is ignorant. Naivete is not the same thing as ignorance. Naivete is just, I simply don't have access to something quite yet. But innocence is purity. Innocence is seeing things clearly. We can only really see things clearly through the eyes of innocence, the eyes of a child, okay? Which is not childish, it's childlike.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing about Ceres here is it's asking us, she's asking us whether or not we want to remain naive or we want to regain our innocence, which requires us to sacrifice and allow our humanness to be along for the ride. Meaning, if we're shooting ourselves that we should know what to do when we don't know what to do, that is artificially assuming that we have godlike powers when we haven't actually really met that place in us that is willing to say, I don't know, in order to have true wisdom arise. Wisdom comes from down and in. And I want to share, I mentioned before we started recording that I'm rereading an amazing book by the author C.S. Lewis called Till We Have Faces. And there's a quote in here where he says, holy places are dark places. It is life and strength, not knowledge and words, that we get in them. Holy wisdom is not clear and thin like water, but thick and dark like blood. So what are we willing to sacrifice with assuming that we should know? There's a hubris in assuming that we should have the answers already. There's an assumption that we come in with, in a sense, that we should have it all available to us. And this is a marker of how much we have deferred our own empowerment to something or someone's outside of us, rather than our own discovering it from within. So again, we are the ones. How do I show up? Are we still concerned about getting what we want and need out of life through our little desires? Or are we interested in finding what life wants and needs from us? And this is, again, this Saturn in between Venus and Mars. Are we only trying to find what we can get out of life from this perspective of survival, Chiron with the North Node in Aries? Or are we allowing ourselves to meet where survival has been the underpinning of what our motivations and our agendas have been, to drop into something deeper than that, a trust and a faith, Pisces, in ourselves from within, to discover that there's something that life needs from us, not just what we can get from life. And when we start to orient more fully from, I get a deeper sense of who I am from what the needs are of life from me that I don't know yet, but I'm allowing myself to stew in the I don't know, so that more of my true soul's desire can emerge. And this is going to take time. Yes. This is something that, again, we are goldfish in our memories. Unless we are putting in the Pisces polarity, Virgo, the day in and day out, humility to develop the faith in myself, in the places I don't know, to cultivate being the soil in which the richness of Pisces, the waters of everything, of true reality, can form and sink into the soil and aerate and nourish the nutrients that are already waiting in our soil. Unless we're available to really do that in a consistent basis, then we are going to have these eclipses are going to knock us off our center because we haven't really built in the day-to-day trust and faith in ourselves that we are greater than the circumstances that happen seemingly outside of us.
Mm-hmm.
So again, Chiron with the North Node is highlighting the difference. And there's something else about Chiron that I haven't brought in all my work with Chiron with the North Node here yet, and that I haven't heard anybody else speak of. Chiron in Aries, Aries associated with the head, where the eyes are. So there's something about the difference between looking and seeing. Looking has a projectile quality to it. I'm looking at something. I can't help but project an outcome or an agenda onto something. And I'm seeing it with a broken lens, literally like looking through glasses where the lenses are cracked and broken or hazed over like these. But when I'm seeing something, I'm receptive. I'm allowing my eyes to become accustomed to the dark. I'm allowing my eyes to become accustomed to what's real. There's a receptive quality to seeing versus looking. So can we cultivate this practice of seeing, which means we might only see the cracks for a time, but the cracks are just showing us how distorted our lens has been. Is there anything you want to say before I continue in this?
Because if it is uncomfortable for us, it's only, you know, the grace of the divine is saying, look, you may not have seen this, and we're here to show you this. And it's not like you're bad and wrong. And it's just, it's a correction that needs to happen. Like you know, a lot of people are afraid of eclipses. And it's like, we have to understand that eclipses, you know, they're on our side. You know, this is a good thing. It's what we need to know in order to have you know, to connect with our true soul's desire. And yes. If we already have been doing that work, then we're moved into another paradigm. It's a shift that happens. And one of my first astrology teachers, she said, if we do the work, if we know where an eclipse is happening in our chart, and we get proactive, you know, months, we could look at it months or years before, we know where the divine is going to be asking us to look. And so if we can do that work ahead of time and really move into that, and like you were saying, be humble, the soil, the garden, you know, tending to that soil. You don't water a garden once a week. You have daily care with, say, for example, Pisces, our spiritual practices. She said that if we do the work ahead of time, when the eclipse happens, it will rain down its blessings like a good karma piñata. I just love that. I never heard anybody talk about eclipses like that, but I just wanted to mention that there. We could feel lost, and that it's okay to feel lost. If we haven't done the work, the universe will show us this, but not in any harsh retribution. It's just simply saying, look, it's a process. It definitely takes It's not going to happen overnight. On the very least, it'll take a few weeks after eclipse season, you know, because then we get the solar 2 weeks later. So there's a lot of tumult, and it's not about coming to any definitive conclusion, but just to be in that, be in the discomfort.
And what you say about, I love that, not having any definitive conclusion, because that's what an eclipse, a lunar eclipse is. It's like, as we were talking about, eclipses are like resets. They're taking us out of linear time. And so, you know, we expect it at a full moon to be able to see, okay, something is coming to a head here, and then we have the rest of the cycle to close it out. But with an eclipse, the moon is eclipsed. So it's like literally showing us there is never any ending. In other words, we get uncomfortable because there's no finite like point of ending, which we like to know, we feel comforted in. And that's why eclipses can make us feel, it's like, no, it's like a blip. And it's like, it's a wave rather than the particle. There's nothing. And so that can be scary for those of us that are, most of us who, it's important that we have guideposts and signposts, but when we make the guideposts and signposts permanent, or we identify and want to cling to those, that's where the problem comes. We use them as metrics or markers, but when we understand that there's time to let go of them, that's where the spiritual evolution brings us into, there's no ending, there's no one place to be.
In our culture, that can be a really scary notion, but we have to have that where the lights go out, because otherwise we wouldn't be able, there's no perspective if the lights don't go out. That's part of the cycle. The lights are on, and sometimes the lights blip and they go off, but they come back on again. But to just see it as part of this larger cycle of life, that it's all perfect, and it's working on our behalf. It's not, the universe is not out to get us. It can feel that way. I know these eclipses are happening on big points in my chart, and I already feel the uncomfortability, but I have my practices, and I sit with them, and I breathe, and I feel what's there to feel.
Yeah. And then, like you said, and you know, it's like, there are certain practices and certain lineages where people voluntarily go for like 40 days or so at a time to be in the dark, to get accustomed to seeing beyond what the lights, what solar day shows us, right? There's a whole other type of vision. And so this practice of learning to see in the dark is something we can always cultivate. We don't have to wait for eclipses. Eclipses can bring things to a head, and they really amplify. But, you know, what your first teacher said is brilliant. And I would say making it a practice even to just familiarize ourselves with our own birth chart more and more on an ongoing basis gives us the capacity to meet, because then we're uncovering exactly what we're here wired for. So that no matter what transits happen to us, at what time, we are cultivating our own inner resources to meet any of it and all of it the best extent we are at any one time. So one of the things that I also wanted to mention, if I may, is with Saturn in Pisces, the way that I wrote it, the gods in heaven are dissolving, meaning the projected hierarchical authorities outside of ourselves. And we must rely on the ambiguity of the roads not yet traveled through the old earth ways,
right,
to lead the way to the lower worlds of sustenance, nourishment, and renewal. Uranus is in Taurus. The gods are earthbound now.
And Jupiter's in Taurus too. And it's about to meet up in that conjunction, getting closer.
Exactly.
Really highlighting that highlighter pen. Yeah, the resources of Earth as our guide, as it's not this hierarchical figure out there. And like, say, you know, I think about, like, I grew up Catholic, so it was like, oh, there's this structure outside of yourself that you have to, you know, worship and pay attention to. And it never felt right to me. You know, I just have to say it was always, I loved growing up and listening to the stories of the saints and all, but there was this part that didn't feel right. And that was it. It's never outside of ourselves. And this eclipse is really going to show us that.
Yes, definitely. And how much, yeah, beautiful. So Pluto is supporting the disintegration of the old archetypes, though their responses may be to seize us even more vehemently than ever. So one of the things I love about Jung, and I, for any Jungians out there, please forgive me if I'm not getting this 100%, but Jung talked about complexes. Like for me, Aquarian consciousness is the consciousness of the archetypes, the formation of archetypes, especially Saturn as the traditional ruler of Aquarius. So the formation, Saturn, of archetypes or complexes within the human psyche, as Jung called them. And he talked about neurosis came from when we were seized by these archetypes. We believe them to be who we are, right? So what happens is when things start to disintegrate, to the extent we are not in alignment with the natural disintegration of life, the things that we have to end, what are we going to do? We're going to control even more. So the seizing of the neuroses is going to happen even more. We can see it. Like people are like tribal camps of like this person or this group, that group, this self-interest group, this self-interest group, seemingly like these whole pods of groups of different self-interests banding together, accentuating like lonely societies in a sense, like how isolated we are, isolated as groups in a sense. And to me, this is like seeing a rise in these neuroses are where we are clinging on to old complexes or ways of knowing ourselves. But the only way that we can cling on to something is if we haven't fully integrated it. So part again of, for me, this Saturn in between Venus and Mars is how much are we integrating, discovering what is us and what is working upon us. The paradox here is things that work upon us aren't necessarily us, but they're showing us what we are not and what we are. I could go into explaining that more, but I actually choose not to, because it's something that, for me, the space of ambiguity and nuance serves us better, especially with this eclipse, than to delineate everything like specifically.
Right.
Because it involves, we need to be more involved in the nuance. It's not just Andrea or Ariliana saying, this is what's going to happen and expect this. There's no opportunity for self empowerment for anybody in that way. And even being like, what the heck does she mean? This is not letting myself off the hook for not making sense. Trust me. But to sit in the nuance and the ambiguity is giving ourselves, is strengthening our muscle of having faith in that. Not knowing something doesn't mean I'm deficient. It can be I'm humbling myself to recognizing where I've kept myself small by needing to know and understand when there's such more of a vastness in me that is waiting to self-arise when I loosen the need to know, and that the need to know and the belief systems that are in place are exactly the things that are preventing my deeper wisdom from being discovered, from pulling up from the depths.
Yeah. Just,
Yes.
yeah. Yay. And then there's 2 weeks later, the total solar during eclipse season. I find that I'll get moments of illumination and I'm like, oh, well, this is what it is. Oh, great. Okay, I'm finished. I swear I do this with every eclipse. You know, the ego is like, oh, good, you got it. Now you can
Of
wash your
course.
hands and move on to normalcy.
Yes, yes,
No.
yes,
It's
yes.
like, to me, it's like the people who take those raft rides through the Grand Canyon, you know, they say like 80%, I've never done it, but they said like 80% of it is just still water. And there's only certain moments, thank goodness, that it's the class 6 rapids, you know, So there's rapids and then there's stillness. There's rapids and still. So just because you've gone through get one illumination in the eclipse season, there's always more. And it's a real ego trip to even though I say this, I'm telling you, it's whatever, it's what we do. We go into those places and it's not over until it's over. It's like it is, like you said earlier, Andrea, it's a process. There is no end. It's just there are these things. But we do, I mean, in all honesty, yes, we are on the earth plane. Once the eclipse is settled down, then we can kind of we have a little hindsight and we can, see a little more clearly as but we continue our path of discovery. So
Yes, life is a spiral rather than a linear line.
yeah,
Exactly.
that's
Always
a good,
octaves.
I like that. That's a good way to put it. It is a spiral. It's non-linear. Saturn in Pisces is like it's non-linear.
Right.
I'm
Yes.
gonna sit with the things that you shared. I think that's why we do this work. The best service we can give is to just kind of paint a this is kind of where the energies are happening, and then allow people the space to explore that.
Yeah, and different astrologers are going to have different perspectives. There is an astrologer that a traditional astrologer that I, or Hellenistic astrologer that I really admire in a lot of ways. But one of the things that I've heard them say once that I was like, is that good astrologers will look at something and all come to the same conclusion because astrology works and it's logical and there should be, a general consensus and that. Good astrologer will come to general consensus with other good astrologers around things. And I'm like,
Ew, that doesn't feel
wow, that leaves no room for
anything.
right. And there are other astrologers that are gonna focus and highlight on different things of this eclipse. Beautiful. And I hope people get, people might be like, well, I don't know what Andrea's talking about. I have a resonance with this astrologer or whatever. And that's cool. I think that's great. There is no one way. It's like people are drawn to whatever they're available for, whatever they want to focus on. And I think that's brilliant. There is no one, this is what this eclipse means, or this is what this means, or that's also the scary things that eclipse show us. It's like everything we thought or we held on as meaningful, boom, reset. And what really is truly meaningful from the depth of our souls is going to stay. Whatever isn't, what's going to go is going to scare the crap out of us at first, but it's just that it's keeping us small. Whatever and whomever does not bring you alive is too small for you, to paraphrase David White, the
Can
poet.
you say that again?
Yeah, I'm paraphrasing, but whomever and whatever does not bring you alive is too small for you. So where are we focusing our energies to kind of stay with what we know, to hold on to the banks of the river, I think you talked about another podcast. And that's dampening our life force rather than learning to let go and discover the desire beneath all other desires.
Beautiful. That's what I love about eclipses. You don't even know that you don't know it. I
Exactly.
thought it was just desire. Here's desire. It's like, oh no, guess what? There's another layer of desire that you didn't even know existed. So first of all, it's like, whoa, there's this other level. I didn't even know that existed. I didn't know there was a deeper. I was just so programmed to think it was this many Instagram followers or whatever.
Exactly. True desire compels us beyond our comfort zones.
Yeah, it does.
It has to. It's the evolutionary engine of coming more fully alive into more of who we are, more of our multiplicity, which is going to stretch us beyond our comfort zones.
Welcome to the eclipses, folks.
Welcome to life. Exactly. Right. You
Well,
got
thank
it.
you. That's
Thank
this
you,
has been
Eliana.
all right. Please let us know what's coming up for you and what are you feeling. I always love to hear from everybody, and I'm in there being raw and vulnerable too. There's massive changes occurring on the inside here, and it's sometimes hard to just show up and talk about it. But I think that's a place where I'm learning to just let go more and more. more authenticity. So if you feel to leave a comment, let us know. Let us know how you're doing. We're going to meet Andrea back for the solar eclipse, so keep an eye out for that. So much love and gratitude to you, Andrea. Thank you again.
Thank you, and thank you to all your viewers there. You have a great bunch of people who...
They are so wonderful. I love all of them. Oh my, I just love them all. I really do. They're just fantastic. So, all right, everyone. We'll see you soon. This is Irliana Samsara and Andrea Michelle. Andrea, your website, if people want to contact you, can you tell us your website?
Oh, sure. It's Andrea Michelle Heckel, which is my last name, HAECKEL.com.
I'll put the link below. We'll see you soon, everyone. Many blessings.